middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow.
Hello.
With you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. We'll recap the preseason game that took place on Friday in Cincinnati. There were also a few media avails today, so we'll get into what Tom Coughlin had to say. Yes, indeed. A number of players spoke, and Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, gave a review of what he saw out of the preseason game. So we'll start with the media avails. We'll get into the game. We'll get to your phone calls as well at 201-939-4513. You can't get to a phone, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We will work in social media throughout the program. Coughlin, first of all, addressed, John, the fact that they have a new addition to the roster, and that is Brandon Merriweather, veteran safety, familiar with this division, last played with the Washington Redskins, had dealt with some injuries, some suspensions, but certainly adds some depth and experience to the safety mix.
And by the way, that's why we started a few minutes late. We were talking to the players outside. We ran in as soon as we were done. Literally, I'm really sweaty. It's hot as you know.
He earned his paycheck today, people.
Occasionally, I like to go once or twice a week. I like to earn my paycheck. That's about it, though. But, you know, Coach Coughlin and Steve Spagnuolo both talked about Brandon Merriweather. They talked about how he's a very tough, physical player. He likes to get involved, getting into the box and being a physical player. Now, at times, and both Tom Coughlin and Steve Spagnuolo addressed this as well, he's been too physical. He's been a guy that has gone overboard in terms of blows to the head. He has served suspensions for blows to the head. He's been fined multiple times. So if that would happen again this year, that's something that the league carries over. So that would be a problem, too. And both guys said they would talk to him about it. Steve Spagnuolo stressed lowering the target from the head area down to the ribs and the chest area and the thighs. So that's something to work with him on. Steve Spagnuolo said a couple of things that he was told about that he likes, especially from a guy like John Beeson, who, you know, one of the Miami guys in the team that might know him from then, said he's a very vocal safety. He's good. He's a good communicator back there. He likes to talk. So that's something he likes, another veteran out there. Now, he has to learn this defense. He doesn't know it, but he's been in a couple different defensive systems. So all that will be helpful moving forward. I think he's a piece. Do I think he's the Pro Bowl player that he was when he left New England? Probably not right now because of all those injuries he's had since he went over to the Washington Redskins. But he's certainly a welcome addition. And quite frankly, Lance, they need to practice. They need numbers.
They need numbers. I agree with you. Absolutely. I mean, it's an injury-plagued secondary right now, unfortunately, because of what came out of the preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals. You have 90 men on the roster. You have to take advantage of those numbers. And that's exactly what Brandon Merriweather is going to do for this team. Spags was also asked whether or not he has familiarity with Brandon Merriweather, because I know a lot of the questions, John, were geared towards, well, can Merriweather be a guy, forget the X's and O's, can he be a guy that can help mentor some of the young players that are in the mix? And Spag said, honestly, I don't know enough about him. I mean, I've only scouted him from afar. So, I mean, it's really a feel-it-out type of process that's going to take place over the next few days to determine what type of role he's going to have in this defense and what type of presence he's going to have in the locker room.
And again, you would consider him probably more of a box safety. They teach the Giants safeties here to play both deep and in the box. They play left and right, not strong and free. But his strength has always been in the box and being a guy that, you know, lays the wood on people and hits guys. He's not, you know, your prototypical deep center fielder, you know, run sideline to sideline type of player. So I'm sure the Giants will see what he has. They'll see what he can give him, and they'll use him appropriately. And until Landon Collins gets back, and I think I'd be surprised if he played this weekend. I think there's probably a good chance he'll be in the next week. That's just my guess. They haven't announced any medical report on him. You know, he was out there in full pads yesterday with the rest of the team holding his helmet. He didn't practice, but he was out there. Steve Spagnuolo talked about the amount of mental reps he got staying with him throughout practice and, you know, getting the play calls, looking at the adjustments, but it's still not the same as being out there. And you have to be cautious with Landon Collins. You don't throw him back out there with the knee not completely stable, then all of a sudden he sprains the MCL worse, he's out for, you know, 5-6 weeks
setback
or whatever.
Of some sort.
Exactly. So they'll be careful with him. But look, Merriweather's a guy that a lot of Giant fans know the name, so they're very excited about it. I haven't seen so many excited tweets from Giants fans in a long time since the ones I saw yesterday after they signed Merriweather. But look, it's a welcome addition. It'll help a guy like Landon Collins. It'll help the rest of the guys here. and give him room to get healthy and get better before you rush him back onto the
Well, and he's a veteran. I think that's what's appealing, yeah. John. And if you're going to bring in a guy this late into your training camp process, you want to know somebody that's been in a variety of different
Absolutely.
Defenses. And he's been with the Patriots, he's been with the Bears, he's been with the Redskins. So he's had a taste of a variety of different schemes and defenses. So I think that bodes well for him. A few other things that Spags pointed out before we get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. High praise for Demontre Moore. Felt that he was an extremely passionate player since they have had a lot of interaction and contact. He liked what he saw out of the preseason game. He says, you know, Demontre Moore has come a long way in the limited time that obviously he's worked with Spags, just being invested in the playbook and understanding the scheme and realizing where he's supposed to line up and so forth. So I think he's come a long way with respect to communication and digesting the X's and O's.
And you know that he's serious and he cares. And that was the thing that Steve Spagnuolo really wanted to stress, that he's passionate. He's in the meetings. He's talked about a story at walkthrough last week where he pulled him aside and asked him, well, wait a second, in this adjustment, do I do this or do I do that? And he was really invested in getting it right. So that's a good step one.
Yeah.
But that's still just a step one. You know, you can care and you can do all the right things and practice and all that, but then that's to translate to the field. And I don't think we've still seen the consistent play on the field. Now, you hope if he shows this amount of attention to detail and cares as much as he does and practices as hard as he is, that it's going to translate to game day. And frankly, you have to do those things to be good on game day. So those are all good, good signs. But again, let's see it translate on the field in the next preseason game, because I don't think, and Steve Spagnuolo said this at the start of his media availability, he was pretty disappointed with how the defense played in that game against the Bengals in terms of their speed, passion, power, toughness in that first game against the Bengals. He thought they came out. He didn't use the word flat, but the way he described them to me, it sounded like they came out flat. And I think you could see at home from watching the game that that's what the results were as well. And Tom Coughlin basically said the same thing. The team did not come out and play well. So I think everyone liked to see the team rebound, that maybe they were, especially the defense, thinking more than reacting. And that happens when you're learning a defense, though. So you hope as they learn the defense, it becomes second nature, that sort of stuff gets better.
Spags used the word perfectionist, how a lot of guys, they go out there for the first preseason game, they want everything to be 100% correct.
Beeson specifically.
Specifically, John Beeson. And therefore, you get so caught up in what you just alluded to, John. You think, and you're not necessarily just going out there playing loose and having fun, which is what Spags also emphasized. He wants guys that are going to go out there, have passion, have fun. So that's what he at least looked at as to why they got off to such a slow start. The Bengals had that six-play, 52-yard drive in which Andy Dalton hooked up with Mohamed Sanu for that early score. Trevin Wade is one player that stood out in that preseason game. Spags was asked about that during his media avail session, and he said, you know, it's still an early indication, but he likes guys that are around the football, and he would like to see this be repeated moving forward. So that's at least a positive sign for a player like Trevin Wade. And it's interesting, John, with respect to a player like Trevin Wade, I think a lot of people, they don't recognize the name, and that's understandable. He's been in this league, though. He's a four-year vet. He's not just a rookie that was brought off the street compared to some of these other players. He's been around the league here or there. This could be an opportunity for perhaps for him to settle down a little bit.
Yeah, and you hope he learns the system. And you know what? The opportunity right now, Lance, wide open.
Absolutely.
Absolutely wide open. He'll have a great opportunity here to play a lot in practice this week as they move forward. You know, Prince Amukamara is a guy that is slowly making his way back from that groin injury. You saw Jeff Schwartz and Jameel McClain back at practice on Sunday night. Prince, not yet. They're trying to test him out and work him along slowly. I'd be surprised if he played in this preseason game, but Prince did say last week that he hopes to be playing in that game against the Jets in preseason game number 3. That's what Prince said in Cincinnati last week. So we'll see what happens with him, but it's good to see Schwartz and McClain back on the field.
Absolutely, and those were the two notables out of yesterday's practice that have now rejoined the team, especially since they did not travel with the team for preseason game number 1.
By the way, did you watch the practice highlights? Did you see your guy?
Yes, the Odell Beckham catch.
Well, I'm talking about your guy.
My guy?
Larry
well, I got
Dinell.
A lot of guys. Well,
you
okay.
love yourself well, some
I do
Larry
like Larry
Dinell.
Dinell because of
he
what he did last season.
Two really nice catches in practice yesterday. Did we not have those on the website? We also put those Dinell catches
we
up,
do.
Right?
Of yeah, I think I saw one of the two.
Did you see the one-handed
see the other one?
One?
No, that was the one that I did not
you
see.
You did not see the
one-handed
one.
That one I'm going to have to check out.
Right.
Yes.
It was,
I saw
it was
the Odell Beckham
phenomenal.
One is the one that they've been emphasizing on social media. So I saw that one. But
now, see, here's my thing with that Beckham catch. He catches with two hands, and he held it up with one. Like,
oh,
no, no, I caught it one-handed.
Absolutely.
I caught it one-handed.
You know what? The other problem I find with Beckham.
Dude, just go down with two hands. compared.
Of course. The other thing with Beckham is now everything's going to be compared to that catch. Right, that's the problem.
Just go catch it with two hands and go down. Make Coughlin happy. Do you think Tom Coughlin wants him holding the ball up with one arm like that?
No, not at all. Especially in a game.
Absolutely not.
You don't want to dangle it out there for the defense.
And what do? You practice the way you're supposed to play.
Well, you sound like a head coach. You sound like an assistant.
Well,
here.
if I start
Goodness
giving bad,
gracious.
If I say bad stuff here, Tom's going to grab me by the nape of my neck and drag me out of here.
Well, you're preaching exactly what they're selling here. So I'm nice to. It's nice to see the communication.
He doesn't know
level.
You from a speck on the wall. He knows me when I pass
the ball. That goes without
saying. Right?
Yes, obviously. This is part of his routine. He breaks down film and then he watches Big Blue Kickoff live.
Well, no, he doesn't. But he one of his routine is yelling at me though. He does enjoy doing that. I can guarantee you, Todd loves yelling at me.
I can say
random stuff. Coach loves yelling at me. It's one of his favorite things to do.
It's actually everybody's favorite thing to do. The problem is we don't have enough time in the day to carry that out. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines here on a Monday. We start off with Owen in Texas. Owen, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well,
Owen. What's up?
I got a bunch of questions for you.
All right, fire away.
Get them all in.
Yeah, fire away.
The first one is a history question. When did the Giants and why did they switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3?
They moved from the 3-4 to the 4-3. I believe it was when Bill Parcells left, and then they stuck with it under Ray Hanley. And then when they went from Ray Hanley, I believe, to Dan Reeves, that's when they switched to the 4-3. I believe that's true. Or was it until – or you know what? Or was it Reeves or was it when Fossil was here with John Fox that they went to the 4-3? That's a really good question. I'm not positive.
It is a good question. Let me see if I can look it up just
confirmation. We will effort that for you, all right, Owen?
All right. My second question is Trevor Wade an outside guy or an inside guy?
Please,
or is it Wade or Wayne?
It is Trevin Wade, and he's been playing mostly outside.
Outside? And then my dad played football in high school, and he always said, like your worst player is how good your team is going to be. And my idea, like, the worst player on the Giants' offense is Marshall Newhouse. So how good – like, y'all seem to think Marshall Newhouse isn't that bad, despite every fan – I hear talk about Marshall Newhouse on this show, so I'm just wondering what y'all thought about that.
Well, I think the offensive line right now is a process, and it's going to take some time for everybody to get on the same page. What I think is going to make things very interesting for this offensive line is now that Jeff Schwartz is back, and he did get some time at tackle yesterday, John, it should be important to note, but that was because Newhouse left practice for some fatigue and heat issues. So
yeah.
It will be interesting to see what the alignment is today. Schwartz, remember, has experience at guard and tackle.
To me, he's a guard, though. You want Jeff Schwartz at guard.
Correct, and that's how they've been working him. But Tom Coughlin was asked, actually, about where does he look at Jeff Schwartz as a player moving forward, and he said, hey, I look at him as a guard and a tackle. So does that perhaps open the door that there could be some movement on the right side? Perhaps. Now it's a game of speculation.
And you have Pugh that he moved out there, too.
Absolutely.
He played right tackle.
He got a lot
year.
Of different options.
Now, Owen, I'll say this about a Newhouse. Look, he's jumped to three different teams before he got to the Giants. So that should, you know, tell you something about what he's done in his career so far. Number two, remember, he was brought in here to be a swing tackle backup. That's how Jerry Reese phrased it when he got here, and that was his role. He was going to back up right and left tackle because he's played both over the course of his NFL career. So he was not brought in here to be a starter. Now, he'll be given the opportunity. He was a high draft pick, so obviously there's some physical ability there. We'll see if the Giants can bring it out. But if he was a, you know, Pro Bowl starting caliber tackle, he would have got paid like a Pro Bowl starting caliber tackle in the offseason. So he'll be given an opportunity. They believe there's talent there. That's why he was drafted where he was drafted. Now, has he had the production so far in his career that maybe some people expected? He has not. But we'll see if he can do it this year. I don't think it's worth writing a guy off and throwing him away before you see him out on the field for more than one preseason game. But, again, he was brought in to be a swing backup tackle. Will Beattie goes down. All of a sudden, your backup becomes a starter. Let's see how he does.
All right. Thank you. Just one last thing about Brandon Merriweather.
Yeah.
I think of him the way I think of San Antonio Holmes. They were great about 6 years ago, and that's about it.
Well, you have to understand, Owen, that at this point, think about the guys that are out there on the free agent market.
Exactly.
Okay? It's slim pickings to a certain degree. Some guys are battling injuries. Some guys have a pass. So, you know, right now the Giants are exploring their options just like every other team. And appreciate the phone call, Owen. And Merriweather's going to have an opportunity to put his stamp on this team. But I think you have to put things in perspective when you evaluate the free agent market this late in the game.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get a huge name commodity that is going to come in and play like a Pro Bowl all of a sudden.
Well, in fact, he's probably the biggest name commodity that was out there. But again, he hasn't been a Pro Bowl player for a few years, and I'm not sure if I agree with the comparison to Santonio Holmes, because Holmes suffered a pretty darn serious injury that, you know, made him miss an entire season. Merriweather's had injuries, but nothing to me that, you know, I think limits his athleticism as much as Santonio Holmes' injury did for him. So I still think he has it in him. Let's see if he can put it together. Let's see if he can clean up his game, stop making those types of mistakes and committing those penalties, because you know how those types of things drives Tom Coughlin absolutely batty. So we'll see if he can do it. Again, like Lance said, and someone asked me this the other day on Twitter, why haven't the Giants brought in any formidable offensive lineup off the free agent market? I think it was either O-line or DBs. I forget which one. And my answer was, it's the middle of August.
Of course.
Yeah. Everybody that's formidable probably has a contract right now. Now, you're going to pick the best guy that's out there, and there's a good chance if Merriweather puts it all together, he's going to help this team. Absolutely. But there are no Pro Bowlers sitting there saying, eh, I'm going to wait until the middle of August and take a veteran's minimum deal to play this year. It's just not reality.
But a guy like Merriweather, at this point, it's a low-risk, high-reward type of move.
No question.
Because if he blossoms and he stays healthy, it's great.
Yeah.
You didn't sacrifice anything to bring him aboard.
And if it
doesn't work out, no harm, no foul.
And if he stays healthy, he has a better NFL career history than, say, a Jeremy Miles, who has been around for a while, hasn't starred a whole lot. Merriweather has a lot more starting experience than him, and he was the most veteran guy on the Giants roster coming in. So at least you add somebody to go with Miles that'll give you some experience and can help these young guys along a little bit.
Let's head back to the lines. Christian is on the line. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Anita has brought up a certain point about the tight end position a couple of times, I've noticed. But
what's
she
that?
Didn't, I don't know if she just didn't get it, wasn't able to get her whole point across before someone else started talking. But she mentioned that maybe the tight end would be best used as helping the weakness of the team, which would be run blocking. And I know Larry Donnell is just more talented, but, you know, having him practically like a Jimmy Graham type of tight end, you can probably block a little better than that. But, you know, it just seems like it's receiver overkill out there when you could have another guy, you know, helping the tackles out in the run game.
Well, I mean, if you're going to pick out a tight end on this roster that's going to help blocking, it's going to be Daniel Fells. I think Adrian Robinson has the physical capability and size to do it. We haven't seen it consistently quite enough yet. Donnell, as you mentioned, and I'll throw Cunningham into that group as well. They're much more the receiving style of tight ends than they are blockers. But keep this in mind, too. Yeah, I think we are going to see Fells more on first down more when you're going to run the football. But I think nowadays in the NFL, a lot of teams, when they want to run the ball, they don't put two tight ends in to power it. A lot of times teams will spread them out, get nickel and dime defense personnel on the field against you, and then run out of spread formation. So especially with a guy like Shane Vereen, that's something you can do. I think Rashad Jennings can do something like that. So I think it depends on your personnel package, what you want to do, and I think that'll determine how much you see the tight end on the field and in what role. And I've said this before. I was joking with Tino last week. I think you're going to see a lot more four wide receiver sets this year, especially with James Jones coming on now and the way Washington and Jeremy Davis have played this offseason. I think you'll see more four wide receiver sets than we saw last year when you saw primarily 11 personnel with one running back and one tight end.
Well, I would love that because, you know, maybe the passing game can set up the run game in that sense. But, you know, as far as a starting tight end goes that gets most of the snaps, I would just like to see the idea of strengthening the weakness, which would be the run blocking. I mean, it just seems like it would help the team, even though the not as talented tight end would be on the field as much. And, you know, you can still get Donnell his catches, you know, if you give him 15, 20 snaps a game. But if the line is such a liability right now, it just seems more logical to have another good blocker out there to help them.
Well, Christian, that's why they're actually trying to get everybody to be at the level in terms of consistency with respect to blocking. I mean, I don't think they want to say, well, you know, Larry Donnell's a stronger receiver, so let's only put him in 15 to 20 snaps when we just want him to run routes, because then all of a sudden your offense becomes predictable.
He needs to block, too.
He needs to block. Everybody needs to block. Yeah. Cunningham needs to block. Fells needs to block. And they all need to receive, too. So this way they pose a threat to the opposition that's out there.
Yeah, you can't, you know, by putting one tight end, you can't dictate to the defense what you're going to do. So you're going to have to figure out a way to have guys out there that can do both. And quite frankly, there's no Howard Cross on this team right now. We're a guy that has offensive tackle skills as a tight end. I mean, I don't think that guy's on the roster right now. Fells is good, but he's not that dominant road grading tight end that you know, that's going to block the heck out of people. Quite frankly, those guys really don't exist much in the NFL anymore the way it's run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean that they should, you know, be predictable and ask each guy to do only one thing. But it just seems that, you know, that right tackle is going to need some help somewhere. And you know, I'm not saying that Donnell is awful at blocking. I mean, I've actually heard that he's gotten a little better. And I think in the term, you know, Donnell is going to end up being a complete tight end. But it's just that until he's ready, you might want to consider Fells on first and second down.
Well, and I'm sure those are things they're going to experiment with moving forward, Christian, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. But I always say every position on the football field needs to assist in blocking,
oh, yeah,
whether or not there's questions on the offensive line or you have the strongest offensive line.
How about
line?
The wide receivers?
It's another
they
element.
They block, too. I mean, trust me, Tom Coughlin and Sean Ryan, the Giants wide receiver coach, pay attention to how the wide receivers block. They absolutely do. And look, you need tight ends help in the running game. And I was talking to a couple people the other day, and they're like, you have the best offensive line in the world. In fact, I was watching one of the NFL live at training camp reports, and they were talking about, I forget which team it was, and they were talking about, well, the offensive line is really good, but you know what? If this tight end doesn't do the seal block here, your offensive line could be great, but you know, you need that out of your tight end to help out and do his job. Otherwise, the run play gets blown up, and the great offensive line doesn't mean you know what. So, yeah, you need the tight end to block, and I think the Giants know that to help in the running game, and that's why they're working on getting these guys better. But I think we've seen Fells and even Adrian Robinson in there more on first or second down in the spring and summer. I think Donnell's kind of being brought back slowly from that Achilles
injury. Because of the injury, yeah.
And, you know, we'll see how quickly he gets put in there and is used in every snap. But right now it's been a process for him. And I think we've seen those other guys who are better blockers step in and play a little bit more early in downs.
And remember, on the unofficial depth chart, Larry Donnell is second, backing up Daniel Fells
now.
So
good point.
What you just pointed out
great
is indicated
point
on the depth chart, and that shouldn't necessarily be a surprise. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow.
Good
Dre,
reset.
Yes,
good reset.
Tried to reset. You know, we try to mix it up a little bit throughout the course of the program. I'm glad that you approve. We'll see if Coughlin approves a little bit later on. That'll be a whole other story.
That was a solid reset. I think you would be okay with that.
Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, Dre?
You well, Dre?
It's been a little minute since I've spoken to you guys.
It has. What's going on,
I
bro?
Know. Time, no speak.
I know. I'm pretty much just keeping quiet, you know, listening to the show and this, you know, doing my due diligence, watching the preseason and creating my own cut-ups. I want to talk about some of the free agents, the unsigned free agents, especially my fellow Cardinal Hayes alum, Khalifa Taylor. He looked all right out there. He looked like looks like defensive coordinator and defensive line coach kind of like him a little bit. Looks like he might make the practice squad if he keeps up. He keeps doing what he's doing, you know.
Well, Dre, you know what?
Playbook.
I want to add something to Khalifa Taylor real quick. Tom Coughlin, we had a production meeting with Tom Coughlin before the preseason game on Friday night. And I don't like to speak a lot about what we talk about in that production meeting, but I thought this was great, so I'll share it. I forget who it was. I think it was Bruce Beck. He asked Tom Coughlin about Khalifa Taylor, which is a local kid, good story. Bruce was going to use I think he actually did a hit on him from the sideline at some point on Friday night during the Bengals game. And coach's face just lit up. He goes, he's such a good young man. He's so gracious about being here. He showed up, on his first day in a suit and a tie, and he was all pumped up. He does everything the right way. He's trying hard. He studies. He's enthusiastic. And he's working to get much better. So that's the type of guy you want to put on your practice squad that's trying to get better, Dre. All I can tell you is that he's made a very good impression in terms of his approach, his personality, and just who he is as a person on this coaching staff.
That's a good thing. Cardinal head grad. Another thing, you know, I look at the addition of Merriweather. I don't see it as a bad thing, provided he keeps the hits legal. What I'm looking at is I can see him making a team instead of pushing what we already have. I can see that we need that veteran leadership back there. But I can see him, playing both sides, the right or left safety, along with someone who, Bennett Jackson. To me, Bennett Jackson is our starting safety. That man has shown me some things. You know, he's shown me that he's a giant. You know, he's willing to do whatever's asked and do it as a high, you know, on a high level. And we can't sleep on our own Wade. That's going to be our next backup corner on the outside. He has a lot of, he's a ball hawk. He's always around the ball. He has some good skills. Yeah, I kind of like that.
Well, Dre, I'll tell you one thing very quickly. When you talk about Bennett Jackson, he's actually played a lot in the slot last week in Cincinnati. So they're trying him out at a bunch of different spots. They like his versatility, and obviously, you know, the more you can do, the better chance you have of being on this roster. So at least for now, Bennett Jackson's proving his usefulness in a number of spots, which can't hurt him.
Okay.
I appreciate it. I'll take this off the air. What is your take on, Flowers' performance? I call it 50-50. He did good. He didn't do too good in the run, but he protected Eli and Nasser. So I'll take the.
Well, when they ran to the left side, Dre, and appreciate the phone call, you know, I think there were some productive runs. For a rookie, for his first game, I mean, I think that the results were quite nice, especially since there weren't a lot of mental mistakes. There was just that face mask penalty that Eric Flowers had against him. Other than that, you know, I thought that he was tested a lot by a very physical, fierce Bengals defensive line. He got a number of reps. Because remember, they kept the starting offensive line in throughout the first quarter and then some just so that that unit could be together. So, yeah, I mean, you could certainly classify it as 50-50. As Tom Coughlin mentioned, I mean, everybody had mixed results from that first preseason game. It's just a building block, but for his first taste of NFL action, I always look for a rookie. Is his head in the game? Is the mental mistakes overwhelming? And you didn't see a lot of mental mistakes from Eric Flowers.
Thanks for the call, Jay. We appreciate it. And I think I'll quote Tom Coughlin after the game. Some good, some bad. You know, yeah. You had some plays that were good, some plays that were bad. And quite frankly, for a rookie left tackle playing his first game, I'll sign up for that.
It's only a place to build upon.
Because I'll tell you what. You throw certain rookies out there in their first game, they look like a fish out of water and look lost. And as you put Lance, I think you put it well. He did not look lost out.
Yeah, and that's the key. That's what you want to see from a young guy. Let's head back to the lines. We'll stay in Atlanta. Derek is there. Derek, what's happening?
What's up, Dave?
Hey, Lance and John. Lance, I'm going to call you last week, and I told you I went to Giants practice.
Yes,
and,
I do remember that.
And I told you that I couldn't have to disagree with this, the death chart, because I saw DeMontre Moore looking like a beast. Well, I think we're going to see that depth chart is wrong. DeMontre Moore should be starting, and I think in the next couple of preseasons, I think he's going to start shining here and make his case to be the starter on his team.
Well, you know, Derek, that's up to him, and DeMontre Moore is in the position where he can do it. Let's see him go out and do it. I'd love to see DeMontre Moore earn his way into the starting lineup over the next 3 weeks. Now let's see him do it.
And the one thing I'll add, Derek, before I let you continue, if there's one position that personally I don't put a great deal of stock in the starting lineup, it's defensive end, defensive tackle, because I think at the end of the day they're going to rotate so much that the snaps are going to even out that it really makes no difference who's penciled in on the right and the left side.
And you're going to see Robert Ayers move into that tackle position on third downs, Derek, which means you're going to have basically three defensive ends on the field, which makes the door even wider open for DeMontre Moore.
Yeah, I had to give some kudos to George Selvie. I thought he played well yesterday, on Friday. And, Marcus Kuhn needs to play a little bit better. I think, you know, every time you see the court, you know, him, he's always at the line of scrimmage. You know, I never see him in the backfield making progress to the backfield. And as a matter of fact, I saw him get pancaked, which is kind of embarrassing. But I want to talk about the right tackle, what I call debacle or shambles, whatever. I think the Giants should handle this situation almost like an injury situation. They should go out and trade, do whatever they have to do to figure out this position. You're actually regressing your quarterbacks because they're throwing the ball. As soon as they get the ball, they don't even get taken reads. I looked at this game. If you look at them, basically they get the ball and they throw it. I mean, they don't. I know this is a quick offense, and but I think at this time right now, Eli and Nassif is just basically just saying we're not going to take our chances behind this line of scrimmage, and we're just going to predefine our throws and throw them.
Well, Derek, how about this? I have an option for you, and I had a long talk with a couple people in Cincinnati. We had a long week in Cincinnati. There was a lot of talking going on. And this was one scenario we talked about. We heard Jerry Reese speak a lot when he talked to the media, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now. And he seemed pretty firm that they think Will Beattie can be back at the end of October. So let's say he misses the first 6 games of the year. Expect him back in week number 7, and he's going to play pretty well, okay? How do you like this as a stopgap measure? What if you just, for the first 6 weeks of the year, you have Pugh kick out to left tackle, just on a probationary basis until Beattie gets back. You put Flowers out there on the right side where he can play the position you wanted him to play when you got him at the start of the year, and it's a much easier spot for a rookie to handle than left tackle. You have Richburg, obviously, at center. You have Schwartz at one guard, and then you figure out the other guard, whether it's a John Jerry or you bring somebody in or something like that. Would that be a decent probationary scenario if you're a Giant fan the first 6 weeks of the year before Beattie gets back?
I made that case already. I made that case to, you know, some other friends of mine that that's what should happen, because I saw Pio out there and left me. As a matter of fact, the fight, the day that Damontre Moore got in a fight, Pio was out there on the left tackle, and he was handling himself pretty well. And so I kind of said that should happen, considering what we have here. And it wouldn't be a bad thing. But if Newhouse is playing as bad as he is, and the backup can't beat him out, that means that we really have like a backup in the third string or fourth string guys behind him.
Well, Derek, by the way, very quickly, you say Newhouse is playing so poorly. You realize that of all the five offensive linemen on the field in Friday's game, he was ranked best by Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, I don't know what they're looking at.
I'm just throwing it out there for you. Just throwing it out there.
I don't know what they're looking at. I mean, I'm looking at the eye test and everything. So, but it's a situation that you can just see. I mean, if you go back, John and Lance, and look at how the quarterbacks threw the ball, they got the ball and threw it almost without even reading the field. So I think that's the case of them not having trust in their line.
Well, I think it also has to do with Derek, though, in fairness. Remember, Randall was not 100% healthy, and he went out there with knee tendonitis. You know, there was a miscommunication on a throw to Odell Beckham that didn't necessarily go in the right direction. So, you know, I thought Eli had time to get his passes off. I think a lot of it sometimes had to do with a few miscues with the wide receiving core. Sometimes you tend to maybe read into it, oh, Eli had a lot of pressure in his face. To me, there were throws to be made. Unfortunately, just guys couldn't connect.
Well, Derek, remember this, too. This isn't a drop back five steps, read two coverages, and let the ball go here. You want three-step drop or five-step drop, you know, take your pivot and release.
I understand that point, John, but what I'm trying to say is that even in the West Coast system, you should be able to come off a receiver. And that kind of concerned me, too, because on the left side and on the right side, if a guy made it, Reuben Randle and Odell Beckham Jr., they're running flies and Eli's throwing comebacks. So I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, every time you hear practice and come out of practice, we're doing well, we're progressing, everybody's got the system down, basically, and you still got miscommunications on both sides of the field with two different receivers.
I think that wasn't supposed to be necessarily comeback routes. I think those are supposed to be back shoulder throws based off what the coverage was. But you're right, Eli read the back shoulder, and the receivers read something else.
Right. All right, I just want to say the last before I go is that I heard Philip Rivers got his contract this week. Do you guys think that Eli will possibly get his this week before the actual game starts?
Derek,
I mean, well, not maybe this week, but maybe before the season starts.
Thanks for the call, Derek, man. We appreciate it. Look, I don't know when Eli's going to get his contract. If I had to guess, would he get it before the season started? I guess yes, but you never know. Negotiations go strange ways sometimes. But here's the thing to me. John Mara wants him here. The organization wants him here. Eli wants to be here. When that's the case, eventually you figure something out.
But I think the positive is, if you just look at the rest of the league, and this is just speculation on my part, you know, the 2004 class is always interesting because Rivers, Roethlisberger, and Manning came in the same draft. But Ben and Philip just got their deals. Eli is the next guy in line if you go based on the laundry list of guys that came out of that draft.
Did you read the Monday Morning Quarterback this morning with Peter King?
I did not have a
chance
to see that yet.
He had an interesting graph. Bring up the story. And he had an interesting graph. It showed all three of those guys that were drafted in 2004 and had all their career stats side by side by side. Just click on the main page. It'll go right there. And they had basically their numbers, and they were all almost identical. The only thing that was a little bit off was Rivers had fewer passing yards because, remember, he was behind Drew Brees for a couple of years.
He started in 2006.
Yeah, if you just go to the main story, it'll be about halfway down that first page. And I would love to read the stats because I thought it was fascinating when I saw it this morning. Because obviously the Rivers signing made news, and he gave a nice comparison. Scroll all the way down. Keep going down.
Well, the computer's not necessarily cooperating at your speed, so bear with me here.
You're always a step behind.
Yes, I know. I'm seeing a bunch of videos. And
It's coming.
Boy,
Boy,
oh boy.
I feel like Mike Francesa now going through
the laundry
list stuff
here of an article.
It's a big article, I know.
What did they save the best for last?
They have a very good chart.
Oh, this better be a great chart because I'm scrolling and scrolling here.
I think you scrolled past it. Oh, wait, there it is.
Oh.
There it is. Here we go. Roethlisberger, Manning,
and
Rivers. Here we go. No, they could not. I got to squint here. So 116 wins for Roethlisberger, 99 for Eli, and 92 for Rivers. All right? Super Bowl wins, two for the top two guys, obviously, zero for Rivers. Passing yards, 39,057 for Roethlisberger. Eli Manning leads the crew with 39,755. And then Rivers is about 1,000 behind at 36,655. This is the number I like the best. Read off the touchdown and interception lists.
Well, Roethlisberger is 251 to 131. Mm-hmm. Manning's 259 to 185. And Rivers is 252 to 122. So Manning has the most touchdowns, and he also has the most interceptions.
But they're all within 8 touchdowns of each
other. Yeah, very close
How
in terms of
touchdowns. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
How are they within 8 touchdowns of
now,
each other?
Now, is this regular season stats, though? Or is this regular season and postseason?
Wins include playoffs, but I don't believe that the other numbers
the
do.
Other numbers
Look
don't.
At the quarterback
okay.
ratings, though. They're all very close, too. Eli's a little bit lower than the other guys. But and look, as you said, the road's been paved.
The road has been paved. And also take into consideration Russell Wilson just got a deal. I think the writing is on the wall that it appears Eli could be next if you see all the other quarterbacks who have been signed, sealed, and delivered at this point.
And wait and see.
Absolutely. And the Giants, as you mentioned, have been on the record. They want him back. Eli certainly wants to remain a Giant, so it's just a matter of time at this point.
Absolutely.
Let's head back to the lines. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening? Len, are you there? Len is a man of very few words today, apparently. Oh, we hear
Wait,
Len.
Do we have Len now?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. How hey, we doing? How are we doing, Len? What's happening?
Good.
Can you guys hear me?
Well, desperate times call for desperate moves, and you get Brandon Merriweather. It's hard to believe that we'd have Merriweather if Collins hadn't gotten nicked up and Thompson was out for the season. But, I mean, it's what you got to do. Veteran safety is not a bad move. I think we got to keep him on a short leash. I think you say to this guy, 1 15-yard penalty, although 1 15-yard penalty in the league will probably take care of it for us. But, 1 15-yard penalty and you're gone.
Hey, look, Len, I can guarantee you, both Coach and Spag said today they're going to have, I don't think they've had it yet, but they're going to have a long talk with him and make sure that those hits stay low.
Yeah. But, with regards to the game the other night, it looks like you guys spent one more day in Cincinnati than you needed to.
you waited a few days to use that material, didn't you?
They were still scrimmaging, and the Bengals came to play a game. But it's a tough time to be away, middle of training camp, disappear for 4 days, go off to a different city and practice like that, practice hard like that. I don't want to say it was inevitable, but I hope I'm giving the reason for their problems the other night, and it's not the fact that Cincinnati is that much better than they are. I don't believe it, but I sure hope it's not.
Well, Len, I will say this. Glenn, real quick, the coaching staff saw it. You saw they liked what they saw in the practices. The game, not so much. So they hope the team is more reflective of what they saw in the practice field than in the game. Then again, we heard that a lot last year. Great in practice, didn't translate to the game, so we want to start seeing them do some better stuff on the field here. I know Tom Coughlin thinks that. He said that as much after the game. So that's what everybody hopes, that they start playing better on Sundays.
But at the same time, Len, before I let you continue, remember, last preseason they went 5-0, and there were a number of games where the offense was lighting up the scoreboard, and that doesn't necessarily always – it depends.
A lot of it last year, though, was a second- and third-team offense. Remember that big comeback against the Colts?
Ryan Nassib was on the field, Corey Washington. I get that. But you know what? The truth is, I think in the preseason, though, if you're a fan, you want to see everybody produce, though,
correct,
John. I mean, you're not just looking for the starters. You're looking for even the guys on the back end of the depth chart to produce as well. And we saw that last preseason.
I just want to say, if there's anybody from Cincinnati listening, my comment was not about the city of Cincinnati. It was about the fact that the guys were away 4 or 5 days, whatever it was. And in the middle of training camp, I think there was a little bit of a problem there. I think that weighed on them a little bit, particularly after the hard practices. Hey, let me get into the game little bit, if you would allow. I'm not surprised that Pro Football Focus. I thought Newhouse did okay. It was only a quarter and a half, but let me qualify that. We're not really sure what Cincinnati was doing on the other side of the ball.
Right.
I mean, it may have been very vanilla, and that may have contributed to his performance. But I felt okay about Newhouse, that I can say this, guys. I think Jerry got it right. As a swing tackle, I think Newhouse can handle that. Now, if we got to play him for more than 2 games as a starter, I'm not really excited about that, guys. I think he's really a fill-in. But I thought the other night, he made a case for making this team.
Oh, and, absolutely.
As the swing tackle.
Well, Len, here's the problem. You pick up a guy to be a swing tackle, and then one of your starters go down. What does that make your swing tackle? Yeah. That makes your swing tackle the starting tackle.
Leading up to this, what a lot of guys have been saying, and maybe it's the kind of option that you talked about, that you threw out about 15 minutes ago. That was not a bad option.
In terms of Pugh at left tackle and Flowers maybe at right tackle, you're talking about what John threw out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against that. And again, I think the guy is going to make. I think he's going to make this team, but he's going to make it as that guy who fills in an emergency.
But Len, I'll say this:
that's about it.
If Newhouse plays like he did on Friday, and again, I agree with you. I don't think he was as bad as Derek tried to make it out to be. I thought he was actually pretty. Right. I thought he was solid. I think he can make the case where you don't have to move all those guys around. You might be able to stick with what you have.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you again, and I don't subscribe. But Pro Football Focus is pretty good, guys.
I know that.
I mean,
why do you think I bring it up all the time?
I think they're pretty good overall.
Len, are you looking for an endorsement deal? Is that why you sprinkled that in here? Because, John already has locked up all the endorsement deals. I don't know if they could kick back anything else to you. I'm just warning you.
There were a couple of discussions in the offseason about how many plays each of these running backs were going to get. And, I was going to get split up between the big three, including, Sean Vereen.
Or Shane in his other life.
If I never see Vereen take a handoff on third and short again in his history as a Giant, I will not be disappointed. That's not why we signed Shane Vereen.
But
you could look at that play, and I did. I looked at it a couple of times, guys, to be honest. And, you can make an argument about Danelle blocking on that particular play and so forth, but that's not a play for Shane Vereen. He's the fifth biggest running back. Come on, we know why we got this guy.
Well, Len, keep this in mind, and I thought Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, said something very interesting the other day. He said the preseason is the time where you put running backs in positions that they're uncomfortable and positions that they don't necessarily assume even in the regular season, just so that the team gets an idea what the strengths and what the weaknesses of all these backs are. So I look at that example. You talk about obviously when the drive was halted and Vereen didn't pick up the short yardage. That, to me, was the Giants just trying to get an idea. Hey, can we use Vereen in these circumstances?
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. Based on your conversation with the coach, and I'd have to go along with them. I mean, these guys know more than I do, and he's a good running backs coach. So I mean, I can buy into that, but it was a little disturbing. The other thing is, the deep handoffs by the quarterbacks, both Eli and Nassib, where the guy cuts back to an inside run. With the offensive line that we had, particularly, with the right side being suspect going into the game. I thought that was almost like a kiss of death. I mean, that was – I don't understand the deep handoffs, to be honest with you.
By the way, Len, how about Orleans Darkwell, by the way, as you're talking about running backs? He played heck of a game. Yeah. And tomorrow night on Big Blue Kickoff on Giants Training Camp Live, we will have a one-on-one with Craig Johnson. He talks a lot about the great work that Orleans Darkwell did in that game on Friday. And, look, I'd be surprised if, including the fullback, they keep five running backs. But I'll tell you this, Darkwah is doing everything he possibly can to make that a tough decision. He's been good in his assignments, he's pass protecting, he's running the football, and lo and behold, he's a darn good special teams player too.
Bingo.
So he's really making a case here.
I'm sorry,
really
go ahead,
making a
go
case.
Ahead.
No, go ahead, Len.
Yeah, I was going to say, with regard to Darkwah, and I even said this, I was watching the game. Actually, I didn't see it live. And for the first time, I can't remember when. It's got to be, I can't ever remember doing this. But we had a social engagement on Saturday night, so I paid absolutely no attention to it. And I turned on the NFL Network, 7 o'clock on Saturday morning to watch the replay of the game. So I didn't see it originally. But, we ran that play. I was watching it with my wife, and, I commented to her. And then we noticed, he turned those shoulders toward the goal line. I know he's 60 yards away, but you talk about running north-south. The guy really cut back beautifully.
No question. Yeah. Len, appreciate the call, friend.
He really cut back beautifully.
All right, Len. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Good chatting with Len in Maryland.
By the way, Akeem Hunt, another guy that flashed some speed on the kickoff
special teams. Yeah. I thought the backup running backs, and I guess maybe I should be more specific, the guys that are at fourth and fifth spots right now on the depth chart, made probably the strongest statements on Friday night.
Now, one thing Coach Johnson said to me about Hunt is that he ran more of a read option in college, so he doesn't really quite understand the timing and all the intricacies of the various number of running plays they have in a pro-style offense. That's been a real trick for him trying to get back for it. But I talked to Hunt after the game on the post-game show, and he thought he was pretty happy with how he did in pass protection. Now, he's not a big guy, so he's going to have to use a lot of leverage, use his smarts, but he's not going to out-muscle any linemen or linebackers here. But if he can get that stuff square, if he can be a dynamic kick return guy, to me, Hunt is still the perfect guy that you want to get on this practice squad. I haven't looked it up. I don't think Darkwa is practice squad eligible based on the amount of games he played last year. I have to look that up. He might be in one of those exception spots you could put him in.
I want to say Darkwa may be still eligible because they expanded it where you could have at least 2 years in the league and
right.
still be on.
But the way he played, he ain't getting through waivers.
No, somebody will probably gobble him up, absolutely. And I think the Giants need to think from that perspective, too. That's what makes it very challenging.
Absolutely.
You brought up an excellent point about Akeem Hunt. There was actually one play that stood out to me, John. Nassib is about to get hammered, and Akeem Hunt steps in and saves Ryan Nassib. I mean, that wasn't just a game-saving type of play. It was a player-saving type of play. So he was very alert from that perspective, and those are the types of things that really determine whether or not you make the roster, you make the practice squad, and so forth. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Elijah is on the line. Elijah, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing today?
What's up,
well,
B? How's everything with you?
Hey, good, good. I have three things I want to clarify on real quick or talk about.
Sure.
My first thing is, like, the injuries. Oh, man. With the safeties, I was, like, definitely Lennon Collins and Mikel Thompson going down. I was like, oh, gosh, here we go again. But, I mean, I think, like you said, I think the caller talked about it earlier. I think it opens up opportunities for other players to step up. Good thing is, I mean, Landon Collins is now for the season. He's like, no, week to week or day to day, I believe, is what it said.
Yeah, day to day.
But, okay, perfect, cool. So, you know, I like what I've seen a little bit from, I think it was, who was it, 24? 20, what's his name?
24 is Bennett Jackson.
Bennett Jackson, yeah, I like what I've seen from him. He did some pretty good things. I think he got, you know, busting the coverage a couple of times, but besides that, he did pretty good to me. But besides the injuries, no, the game was went kind of up and down. My second point is the D-line. I was kind of shocked of why Marcus Coon started at defensive tackle over Colin Jenkins or any Jay Brown or somebody. I was like, I don't know why he started because he doesn't really know proof that he's, you know, is capable of being a starting defensive tackle. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Elijah, and I was talking to some of the assistant coaches in, before that game, and they had told me that Marcus Coon, heading into that game at practice, was playing some of the best football of his career. In terms of being a stout run stuffer in the middle, he was being really one of the best defensive tackles on the roster in practice thus far this summer in terms of stuffing the run. Now, I agree. I don't think we saw that necessarily as much as we would have liked on the field on Friday night, but that's why they gave him the opportunity because, quite frankly, he earned it in practice. He was the guy out there that did the best in that role, so they gave him the opportunity.
And the other thing I'll add to that, Elijah, is, you know, it's another reason why you shouldn't get too caught up in who starts a preseason game.
Correct.
Because a guy like Marcus Coon, for example, should be getting more snaps, John, because they need to evaluate him more so than perhaps some of the other players who were very much in the rotation last season. So I think it's beneficial that Marcus Coon got the opportunity, so this way there's more of a sample size as they get ready to narrow down the 53 roster.
True. I think Jay Brown had a monster game, to be honest, around the second half of the game. But my third was my impressions that I had of certain players.
Okay.
Keep this note. I want you guys to remember these players. We already talked about Akeem Hunt and Earl Darkwa earlier, so I'm not going to bring those guys up. My three guys are, Trevin Wade. I think he played outstanding. He did get beat, which was one of the top plays, and I think on NFL Network, I believe. He did
get that was the Greg Little play for 40 yards. He beat him down the sideline. Yeah.
Yeah, besides that play, he did pretty good to me. I can't pronounce his name right. I think it's Devin Ugna.
Devin Ugna.
Middle linebacker.
Yeah. Yes.
He played really, really well. And my last and final guy is Bobby Hart, which I'm glad I like what I've seen him playing right tackle. I think he played really, really well. If you guys watch the tape, I don't think he has had any pressure on Ryan Nassib. So those are my three guys I want to got to see you guys and talk about. And those are my three. I'd like to say that they're pretty well that game.
Thanks, Elijah. Appreciate
the call. You know, I didn't notice Bobby Hart in the game, and usually when you're an offensive lineman, that's a good thing. I could tell you in practice against the Bengals last week, he showed a lot of power off. Now, I still wonder about his, you know, lateral agility side to side. Talking to David Deal last week, he still thinks long-term he's a guard. He likes him as a powerful mauler inside, and I think that's where he'll wind up eventually at guard. But I liked what I saw from him in Cincinnati. Trevor Wade made the play, obviously. He got beat on another.
But he bounced back. That was impressive. I think that says a lot about his mental fortitude.
By the way, he made another play in practice last night, deflected a ball into the hands of Bennett Jackson, which a lot of people thought were a pick, if you see the slow-motion replay. That was the one that Jackson reached over to grab, if I remember.
Yeah,
it bounced up off the ground, so that was really incomplete.
Well, you sold it very nicely on the video, so I will pat the Giants production team on the back for that.
I don't want to burst any bubbles, folks, but if that went to the video replay up there in the booth, that would be an incomplete pass. And then who's the third guy you mentioned?
Devin Unga, he mentioned, the kid out of BYU.
And now he's likes to be known as Uwani Unga, by the way. That's his nickname. I don't know
Devin,
how many.
I think they both go hand in hand. I think they're both allowed.
He likes to be Uwani. That's
well,
what
I
he
heard
prefers.
From my people that Devin is preferred, too. So I don't know. We're having some mixed
Devin, results. I think Devin's his actual name, but Uwani is what his nickname is, and that's what he likes to be called. That's what I understand.
Okay. I'm not going to doubt that. I think both ways are acceptable, at least from what I heard.
I'm curious as to who your source is here.
Well, I'm going back to sources from his collegiate days.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm going by.
Interesting.
But I didn't know that there were some conversations that occurred here.
We need to have a chat about this.
Yes,
I'm curious
I think we do.
All right,
yes.
That's interesting. I thought he was strong. Coach Herman spoke to the media on Sunday. He said he thought he played pretty well, as did Tony Johnson, the other middle linebacker, who really took all those snaps Jameel Klain would usually get. And you know what? You want to have Jameel McClain back, and he is back now. But that was invaluable experience for a guy like Unga, for a guy like Tony Johnson, to get him out there and see what he can do.
And the other thing to note about Unga, John, is, you know, he battled a number of injuries, specifically late in his collegiate career. So, you know, this is almost the first time in about a year and a half he's gotten back on the football field.
Two full years,
absolutely. Yeah, and I think that they were impressed with the fact that he was, you know, very aggressive. He can move well from side to side. If he could continue to carry that out, you know, who knows? Perhaps, you know, he could find a place, whether it be on the roster or the practice squad. I think that's a player with a lot of upside, assuming he could stay healthy. So that is certainly key. Want to check out Twitter here before we close up shop on the program.
And we start a little bit late, so we go a couple minutes over.
So
it's not a big deal.
Correct. We'll try to get in a few tweets here before we wrap up shop.
Now, see, I don't have my computer. I said we ran in here for media availabilities. I wasn't lying. I ran in here. That's why
I'm not prepared. The ultimate sacrifice. The excuses, you could tell. I mean, he's just rattled them off all throughout the program. Don't overlook that factor. Anyway, getting back to more important factors.
I dislike you so much.
Seven with a T. That's been well documented as well. At seven with a T. Darkwa has done everything right ever since he put on a Giants uniform, forced a fumble on special teams against the Rams last season, and scored a rushing touchdown. He was picked up in November just to put the timetable together. Michael Cox gets hurt against the Seahawks. The Dolphins part ways with Darkwa. He then takes Cox's roster spot, and he really stood out as a special teamer, and you emphasized this earlier in the program. So, you know, while he's looking good as a running back, the fact that he's also solidified a role on special teams is only going to further help his cause.
He could be a great runner. If he didn't play special teams, he wouldn't even be in the conversation.
There you go.
That's all you need to know. And by the way, speaking of which, heard really good things about the effort and seriousness Corey Washington is putting forth on special teams, too, in Cincinnati. So that's something else to keep in mind moving forward.
And that was a big part of the conversation last season about becoming a well-rounded player.
People like him, and a lot of people like Jeremy Davis around here, too. That's going to be a very interesting back end of the wide receiver depth chart when push comes to shove.
Well, there is certainly a lot of depth there. Javon Armstrong at I Am Javon.
By the way, Preston Parker, too, I should put into that mix, too. People like what he does on special teams.
Well, I mean, as we know, with James Jones coming into the mix, John, if you want to solidify a wide receiver roster spot, special teams is a must. I mean, there's no wiggle room there anymore.
And I'll tell you what, I'm no longer as convinced as, say, Paul Dottino is that James Jones is guaranteed a roster
spot. I would
agree
with you.
I think more likely than not, but I don't think it's a guarantee.
I agree with you. I think a lot of people, when he was brought into the mix, given his resume, his connection to Ben McAdoo, it's almost as if it's an absolute. But I think there's a lot of competition on the back end of this depth chart. I don't think anybody's locked beyond the three of Randall Beckham
and Cruz. Well, here's the thing. I don't think it's going to be anything James Jones does to lose a roster spot. I think what would change coaches' minds is those young guys, Washington and Davis, playing so well that they can't lose them. You know what I mean? We can't afford to put this guy through waivers. We think somebody's going to get him. We think they have really bright futures. We can't lose these young guys. I think that's what will change the coaches or Jerry Reese's mind more so than James Jones doing anything wrong. I think we know what James Jones is. He's a very good, solid NFL wide receiver. But if those young guys are so good, it makes you think twice.
Well, and keep in mind, part of the rationale to bring in a guy like James Jones may have been to motivate some of those
maybe.
Players.
You could be right.
I'm not saying that, you know, James Jones has a tremendous amount of value, but I think the other end of the benefit of bringing him in the mix is, let's see what it does to guys like Corey Washington. Let's see what it does for guys like Preston Parker.
And
it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And I know when he first got here, I thought that Dwayne Harris might have a bigger role in the offense in terms of a receiver. Don't quite think that as strongly as I did then.
Didn't see much in terms of the Bengals game. Though it's still early in the preseason.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can only read into so much. And Jeremy Davis is another guy, too, by the way.
I just like what I see from Jeremy Davis as a receiver. I like what I see from Corey Washington. I like what I see from James Jones. Again, that's not saying I don't like what I see out of Harris. I just think he's so valuable on specials. If you have other guys that could take up those wide receiver snaps, keep him active, get him on the field, I think that helps the team long term.
Well, and we know where Harris is going to make his money.
You've seen
it in practice already on special teams. Certainly could be a dynamic player if given the holes
and
the opportunities. A few more tweets here. At I am Javon, I love the Flowers penalty, the face mask penalty. She says, whatever it takes to keep Eli on his feet.
I won't show that to Coach Javon, I promise. He did not like the Flowers penalty. But,
okay.
Yeah, you don't want to have Eli get laid
out,
obviously, and that's better than him getting hammered. But how about you do it cleanly next time?
Fair enough. At Easy _BKNY, we were talking about Akeem Hunt. He asked, do you think Hunt will make it to the practice squad if Hunt keeps playing the way he does? Like Darkwa, he's concerned. I think he'll make a roster somewhere else if he goes potentially even to the practice squad.
Boy, it's hard for me to predict that. I don't know if he go to a roster, a practice squad somewhere. So by the way, he's at Easy BKNY. He's had some of the best Twitter questions I've seen on the show in a while the last few days. I want to give him a little props first. He's done a very good job with those Twitter questions.
Some good stuff. Yeah.
Boy, you know, that's a great question. I don't think right now you can count on that. I don't think you can put Akeem Hunt on this roster just to do kickoff returns. So I think, you know, granted everyone else stays healthy, I think you try to sneak him on the practice squad and you keep your fingers crossed. Now, can he do enough in the next three games to prove that he's more than just a kickoff returner and make it, you know, more sense to be on this roster? Absolutely. Absolutely. But we got to see it.
Big Dash 07088 at ColeWiss88. He's also weighing in. He says Darkwa or Hunt won't make it past waivers, according to what he's seen already.
Too early.
It is too early. I think.
Remember, Darkwa was waived last year by a team.
Well, and Craig Johnson, as complimentary as he was about Darkwa when he met with the media, John, the last statement when he wrapped up all the good things that Darkwa did, he said, consistency. That's what we're looking for. We're not looking for, actually, his exact term was one-week wonders. That's what I loved about what Craig Johnson said. He said, I want to see multi-week wonders.
I love the messages that he gives to his players, the way he enunciates, he talks about them and puts them out there. I think he does a very good job with that.
I would agree. And he's very insightful when he speaks to the media, too. You always like that because you get a lot out of the assistants who are around these players every single day.
We hope to maybe get Merriweather at some point later today, maybe after practice or in the afternoon for the website. Not one-on-one necessarily, but when he talks to the media, we'll put it up there. Otherwise, we'll have him tomorrow afternoon, by the way.
Sounds good. And
actually, you know, not tomorrow. Tomorrow, there's no media availability.
Correct. Players are off.
But Wednesday, perhaps we get him then.
And speaking of tomorrow, you and I will be back in the mix.
I know. Back-to-back shows.
Correct.
Very exciting.
Very rare. I know. I don't know.
Boy,
what.
You really got lucky with that switch tomorrow, huh?
Well, it accommodated my schedule.
Yes.
It's not called lucky. It's just called accommodating my high needs, which has been well documented on this program.
You're just very lucky to have someone that makes these schedules to be so understanding to fit these shows to your every whim and need.
Well,
because, you know, those guys don't come along very often, and when
they
do, I think there should be an adequate level of gratefulness that such flexibility can be offered to someone that really can be, you know, such an irritant from time to time.
A gift basket, a bouquet of flowers.
I think that's probably true.
That's what I think deserves in return. Absolutely.
Maybe not flowers. I think a gift basket of some kind would be nice.
A gift basket.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have to negotiate that. My people will speak to your people behind closed doors. We'll go from there. I was also going to add, it also helps that Tino, you don't even have to give him anything to show up to the facility any day. So his flexibility helps mine as well. We need to make sure that that's clear.
Ultimate flexibility.
I
could honestly, Paul is 5 minutes away or 10 minutes away. I can call him if the show's at 1:30, at 1:30. 20, and he'll speed here at 90 miles an hour and almost kill himself to get in here.
The police are on standby to provide the escort for Paul DeTino. That's how well-known he is within the community. All you need to do is dial up Route 3. They'll close down Route 3 just to accommodate Paul DeTino. I'm telling you, I've seen it up close and personal.
Now, is he running behind the police cars, or is he driving?
Knowing him, listen, with the power of those Nikes, he'd run right behind him. He doesn't need the vehicle.
This is fun.
Absolutely. Always a blast.
We'll see you tomorrow.
We will do it tomorrow. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff
at 1:30.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.